The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Hey, welcome back. We are here, and we appreciate you joining us here in Miramar Beach, Hilton Sandestin Beach Hotel. That's quite a scene outside the boardwalk where we are, and it's a beautiful, little choppy winds right now, but John Talty joining us. John, great to see you.
Great to see you too.
Before we even get started, you made some news about your own career lately.
Switching it up, Paul, you know, had to mix it up, but excited to continue to get to talk to you and cover Alabama and SEC and everything like that.
Well, we're glad you're here, and we look forward to seeing your reports very soon. Just we've tried to go as long as we can today without obsessing about the debates in the other room, but as we get closer to Friday, we're now on Wednesday. What is the resolution going to be on this 8 or 9 game schedule?
I mean, it feels like it's been trending for a while now to be 8 games. You know, it seems like that's what we had heard. That's a lot of what the reporting's been around. You know, I think that's just seems to be kind of where the momentum is right now. It's obviously gotten a lot of discussion. It's been the question that I think everybody's been really asking about this week. But in the grand scheme of things, how much it matters. I thought it was interesting what Kirby Smart said yesterday, Paul, that it's in some ways the most overrated conversation, you know, but it certainly fans care, I think.
They do. They don't care about the money because there's already so much money involved anyway. Is there any way to – is there – Does it seem temporary, like a one-year, a one-off?
Yeah, you know, a year or two, I think, okay, is kind of a stopgap. And then, you know, if you say you kick it down the can down the road for a year, you bring in Texas, Oklahoma, playoffs expanding, you know, there's some different kind of pegs there that would make sense to, you know, move to a 9-game if it makes sense. And it gives you, if you know that's coming down the line, gives you a year to unwind some of these out-of-conference road games. That seems to be part of the discussion, too, trying to get rid of some of those things.
There's been some conversation, you know, opinions, national media people like you talking about, here's the SEC, the big bad bully on the street. Why are they not tackling what everyone else is? It's a snapshot perception. It's hard to really counter when the SEC has owned the sport. Does that matter other than in the moment?
I don't think so. I mean, I think as long as SEC continues to do what it does, I mean, you look at Alabama won 2020, Georgia's won the last two, you know, people can complain. It's something we've seen, Paul, too. People always complain about, you know, how a lot of SEC schools play an FCC-type opponent the week before the last game of the season. And you know what? Hasn't changed anything. They continue to win. They continue to prove that they're worthwhile. So I think it's an easy point for people to make outside of the SEC, but I don't think people care that much.
No. Let's get to the coaches and the personalities. Somebody asked Kirby Smart the other day, does he feel as if his program had passed Nick Saban? And he gave a nuanced Anthony Blinken-like response, which you expected from somebody that, but you know, you've covered Nick Saban most of his tenure. You wrote a best-selling book on the leadership traits of Saban. You're kind of the Saban whisperer. Nick Saban opines, but what do you think is going on inside his mind right now when Kirby Smart's attempting to do what he couldn't do 10 years ago?
I mean, he's obviously aware of it. You know, I think you can think back to that moment that happens. I think it was on ESPN, the national championship game, what David Pollack said and the way that Nick Saban reacted. I mean, he's very in tune to what's happening. He knows what Kirby's building. He knows, you know, how tough it is to try to take down because he was that guy at one point. And so I think there's that motivation to kind of prove that he's still – has the biggest program, you know, in college football, where right now it's Georgia. And I think he realizes that. And I think that's why this season in particular will be very important for Alabama, because if Georgia can win a third in a row, Alabama, if they miss the playoff again, like, there'll be a lot of conversation about how Georgia and Kirby Smart are the kings of college football and how Alabama and Nick Saban have taken a step back.
Alabama fans, as you know, push back hard. They say, okay, great. Kirby Smart's beaten Nick Saban one time. Why are we going down this road? I mean, I think it's a natural road to go down, but still, in terms of Nick Saban, though, I mean, at his point at this point of his career, the fact that he's trying to prove what?
Well, and I think the key thing too, Paul, it's all relative, right?
Yeah.
And so it's not like he had a 5-7 year last year. I mean, he won the Sugar Bowl, was the number 5 team, was, again, a couple plays away from probably being in the playoff and having a chance to win a national championship. It just, what it comes down to is with both Alabama and Nick Saban, we hold them to the highest standard
right.
because of what they've done. It's been self-imposed standards. And so any little small wobble, we kind of blow it up into a bigger thing. And I think that's kind of what's happening here, is that Alabama is still very good. Nick Saban is still by far one of the greatest coaches. But people are just seeing what Georgia's building or has built. And I think there's questions as to whether Alabama can hit that level.
Someone told me something yesterday. They said they had been in Tuscaloosa and talking to people. And they said, you know, our roster is incredible. Talent's everywhere except QB. What do you hear on that?
I think that's a big question, right? You know, I think that there are areas where you can feel better about where things are, and not to get in all in the weeds, but there are different positions that are important. Offensive line, running back, wide receiver, you know, that I think they're going to feel really good about the talent they have. But I think back to all the games last year where Bryce Young was just a magician and some of the things he was able to pull out of nowhere. Lots of games where, you know, we talk about the two games that they easily could have gone the other way. Well, Texas is a game that they easily could have lost. Texas A&M was a game they easily could have lost. And it was some of Bryce Young's heroics at the end that made the difference. Who is that guy this year? We don't know. And, you know, I'm sure there's different reasons why they did it, but generally speaking, you do not bring in another quarterback who thinks he can start if you feel great about your quarterback room. And Nick Saban has said as much, that they felt like they needed to add another guy into that room. And it's the first time since maybe 2015 or so, Paul, when we had the Jake Coker kind of Cooper Bateman situation where we didn't know there was a clear guy. All those years since then, there's been a clear guy.
Let's see if we can hold the schedule for a second. And John, you look at this, and Alabama is, I think, over and under is 10.5. The trouble seems obvious in one respect, but as somebody who knows this program inside and out, if you had to point, where would you point to as, that is going to be a rough matchup?
I mean, I'm fascinated by Texas week 2.
Okay.
I mean, I just think that was a game where, not to go fall back into if this person didn't get hurt, but, you know, that was a game where Texas, they were strong before the quarterback went down. So that's a really, I think, strong early test. You know, no offense to South Florida, not super concerned about that one. But Texas, then you got Ole Miss. We know Lane's going to try to scheme up a lot of different things to try to beat Nick at some point.
We've heard that before.
Yeah, and, it's one he wants. You know, and I'm sure if you ask him deep down, the fact he's seen Jimbo and Kirby and others beat Nick, you know, he wants to join that club.
Yeah, I mean, there's this famous story, I may have read it in your book, I don't know, that Kirby Smart, when Kirby Smart was playing Alabama in 17, Jimbo Fisher was at the game. I think he was just moving to A&M, and he was sitting with Jimmy Sexton and the crew, and somebody I know was in that room, and they asked Jimbo, do you have a rooting interest? He said, oh yeah, I'm pulling for Saban. I don't want anybody else to get one of these. I mean, it's important to have a national championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, Kirby, just the way that he has ascended up the sport, you know, I think when this is that time of year, Paul, where all the, you know, the coach ranking type lists come out, and I think most of them, at least from that I've seen, still have Nick number one, and that's, you're getting the benefit of the full resume, rightfully so. But Kirby to have two at this stage of his life, if you think about how much he can do over the next 20 years, I mean, he will, when all is said and done, could have a run at being one of the greatest ever. He is in that kind of trajectory right now.
It's remarkable when you think about that, because if you go back to, I think, 2015, Urban Meyer had won 3 national championships and was the pretty heavy favorite to win in 20. He won in 14. He was a pretty heavy favorite to win with Ezekiel Elliott and that, the entire crew up there. And, of course, they fell short. He would have had 4 at that moment, and we would have had something. Assuming Urban would have held it together, which seems like a waste of an argument. But that's how rare these moments are in time.
And they can also flip on a moment. You know, yeah. You think about Jimbo winning a national championship, then they go to the playoff again the next year,
right.
And then hasn't been back since. Dabo, there was a time where he has two, and then it's like he's maybe the new king of the sport, and then he's kind of dropped off, and now he's having to kind of refix things. So it's way too early to proclaim anything, you know, too broad, but clearly for Kirby to win back-to-back says a lot about his talent, and it shows that some things just have to break your way, and they have for him the last couple of years. And then, but before that, I mean, he almost won in, against Alabama before Tua, you know, second and 26. He could have had three there. You know, there's just all these little breaks that you kind of need to have go your way, and he's had a few recently that definitely have.
John, before you go, we talked about the two most prominent programs in the SEC. Everyone seems to want to anoint Brian Kelly as that next guy. I mean, are you in that camp, or is there someone else you see that could be a factor?
I mean, I think there's three guys that you would point to. I think Brian Kelly is the obvious one. The fact that he was able to win the SEC West last year with a talent that he inherited. We've seen him have a lot of success at Notre Dame and Cincinnati. If he continues to recruit well, I think you feel really good about that. I think if Josh Heupel continue to build off of what he's done, I think they have a really good, innovative NIL collective there that's done well, I think, for Tennessee and helping get the talent that they need. And then finally, I think Hugh Freeze is kind of the wild card at Auburn. You know, we've seen him have success at Ole Miss. We've seen him beat Nick Saban. I think that if he can get that thing back up and running again from a recruiting standpoint, get the necessary talent in, and he's done well in the transfer portal, I think he can have them competing at that West. So it's interesting, though, when you name a lot of them, it's more West teams than I think East, but I think those are some of the coaches that I would pinpoint beyond just, of course, Nick and Kirby.
John Talty joining us here at the beach. Sean, great to see you. All the best with the new position.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
We'll be watching it and talking to you very soon. We'll take a short break. Later on, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference will join us, as well as Dr. Mark Keenum, the president of Mississippi State. We'll talk to some more ADs and sports analysts. Coming up next, Seth Emerson from The Athletic.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We're back here. It's been a busy afternoon, and it's only going to get busier as we continue here on Miramar Beach. We've already talked to Kiffin and Coach Lee, you heard from Drink. A number of writers will be joining us with their opinions of what is going on, and a couple athletic directors and the commissioner, and as well as the president later on. Speaking of presidents, athletic directors, Seth Emerson joins us from The Athletic.
Did I get a promotion?
You have. Great to see you. Seth, of course, covers a lot of Georgia and other things. Let's start with Georgia, because we've talked a lot about all these secondary, they're not secondary, they're big issues, but the Dogs don't seem to be slowed down in terms of from a recruiting standpoint and from the obvious number one pick in what we will see in the polls coming out here very soon.
It's what happens when you recruit the way they have. It's just kind of never ending. And remember that they lost 15 NFL draft picks off the 21 team. And a lot of people wondered how they would recover, and they were better. They were they didn't lose a game, which they did do in 21. And if you look around that roster, I mean, there's still things you could see that are question marks. You never know about quarterback. He has not started a game yet at the college level, but he's experienced. He got in the national championship game. Defensive line could be interesting without Jalen Carter and Bear Alexander, but they've still got good players there. So they're going to be the number one team. They should be, and seems pretty safe to say, Paul, they're going to be unbeaten well into October based on that schedule.
Yeah, and I wonder about that, Seth, because, I mean, last year, I'm not going to say Oregon was a game that too many people outside of Oregon had circled, but right. It was at least something you could talk about. There's really nothing Kirby Smart can talk about right now other than the usual Kirby Smart speak.
Eating off the floor. He was on your show yesterday, I believe. Did he use that expression?
Yeah.
That was their mantra. They're not focused on Clemson like they were to open the 21 year, or Oregon. They're not focused on Oklahoma because that game, which was going to be week two, was canceled. Next year they open with Clemson again, so they have that. But it's going to require some self-motivation, and that's something you do wonder about. Does that catch up to them at some point? You do have a possibility, and this is something Kirby Smart, if you gave him truth serum, would probably say that he's worried about, is the complacency part, where you've had a program that lost that many draft picks and then was actually better the next year. Does that creep some complacency in where, well, we're Georgia, we're going to be good no matter what? And then you add to that a schedule that is not going to offer any extrinsic motivation, and it's a challenge for Kirby Smart.
Recruiting is a snapshot, and in today's world it means immediate, but it may not mean a lot down the road. But having said all that, I realize you're a columnist and a writer, but based on what I read in your publication and others, this upcoming recruiting season looks like the real payoff of what we've seen the last 2 years. That is an indicator, is it not?
Yeah. I mean, it's why Kirby Smart is just solely like laser focused on recruiting, and in a way that it permeates the whole staff. He hires staffers who he also wants to think that way and think the way he does. But Shane Beamer put it to me years ago that he's the hardest working recruiter on the staff. And when the head coach is that way, it has an effect on the entire staff. Something that kind of little noticed this offseason, Paul, is Trey Scott, defensive line coach, is now earning $1 million a year. A position coach, not a coordinator, is earning $1 million a year. What is the reason for that? Now, the defensive line, he has coached them up pretty well, but also those three first-round picks in the 2022 draft that were defensive linemen, Trey Scott recruited them. Jalen Carter, Trey Scott recruited him. He's continued to recruit at a high level, and Kirby Smart is creating that environment where Todd Hartley, the tight ends coach, Del McGee, the running backs coach, Glenn Schumann, inside linebackers coach. These guys are all good recruiters, and it all starts at the top.
Talking to Seth Emerson here. Seth, beyond the football season, all the noise inside there about where the conference is going, just your overview on this week. Nothing's happened yet. Seems like it's trending in one specific direction, but your thoughts?
Seems like the specific direction is not a direction unless you have something move. We talked to a bunch of athletic directors in there, and the way I put it is that they're unlikely to make a long-term scheduling decision this week. They could have some sort of stopgap decision, go with an 8-game schedule for 24 that includes Oklahoma and Texas, no divisions. That way, within that 8-game schedule, you can keep Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, and have Texas and Texas A&M meet. I don't know what that means then for 26. Does it become like a one-off like the 2020 season was? Or do you fold in the 25 season, so that you have home and homes in 24-25. But I get the sense, and Greg Sankey doesn't want to admit it, But I get the sense Greg Sankey wants a 9-game schedule eventually. Does he in the next 48 hours throw his weight behind that? And on Friday, we have a surprise. I would never rule it out, but I don't think that's likely.
But the one thing about that, and you're right, I mean, they know how Greg Sankey feels. I mean he said something to you guys the other day. Well, I think he did say, I've let my feeling be known in the room.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, there are no secrets. Everybody wanted the 9-game schedule. Everyone was moving toward the 9-game schedule.
It was the grand assumption.
Yeah.
Everyone was assuming. And I still think eventually it will be, but they're not there yet.
And they say it's not – nothing's about money, of course. But it seems like it is about the money.
I heard some – in all due respect to the athletic directors who were offering up these reasons – that it's not about that, that it's about they need more information on what strength of schedule is going to play into with the 12-team field. Okay.
But isn't it a fact that they had a meeting a couple of months ago where they hashed out the schedule? I remember the AD's meeting in the wintertime somewhere, and that most of this was signed off on, that you would get these three, you would get these three.
I think that, and I remember Jimbo Fisher at SEC Media Days last year,
right,
saying, oh, yeah, these were the three we were given. Like, nobody was talking about this was our one permanent. We've been arguing and talking about who the three permanent opponents are going to be for everybody for the last few months. No one's been talking about the one in an 8-game format. I think there was an assumption that the fine network that employs you and these fine people here was going to up the contract based on Texas and Oklahoma joining and a 9th game being added. I mean, everybody knows what's been going on. I think there's some other factors with ESPN. Also, they don't know whether they're going to bid and get, I assume they will bid, but whether they will get the 26 and beyond playoff contract. They don't know how much it'll cost for 24 and 25 if they take all those games. So I think there's a lot of stuff that's still up in the air, and maybe the SEC will go with this stopgap 8-game schedule for 24 before to buy some time for some clarity on that.
Seth Emerson, having joined us beachside, there is some weather here. Just I'm not sure how much longer we're going to be making it.
This plane is this a weather plane, we think?
As lightning is near, yeah. Thunder. But more guests continue right here at SEC Spring Meetings.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
And we are back, and we are continuing with our coverage of SEC Spring Meetings. We have spent a glorious day and a half on the beach, and we come out here and get a New Yorker, and it all goes to pot. Ralph Russo joining us from the AP. Ralph, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm sorry. Did I bring the lightning? Is that I don't think I have that kind of power, but you never know.
Well, you certainly bring knowledge, and we look forward to getting a. I think they call this in the trade the view from 38,000 feet. You cover the SEC among all other conferences. We think there's no other conference, so we expect to see you. Ralph. Just without knowing how this meeting ends, just from the first 2 days, what's your takeaway, and where is this league going, and how is it being perceived?
I mean, the league is in many ways stronger than ever. I think the the interesting debate here about 8 or 9. My sense of it is if they don't get to 9, and it looks more and more like maybe they might not get to 9, I think the league will take a little bit of a hit nationally on that front. If you are going to add Texas and Oklahoma, you're going to win all these national championships. You're going to constantly pound your chest about how you're the best. And there's certainly some reason and evidence that it is the best. Then why are you afraid of playing each other a little more? So now, do I think that's a major setback for the SEC? No, but I do think if the 8 or 9 conference games debate doesn't land at 9 and doesn't seem to be trending that way, I think nationally there'll probably be a little bit of like, hey, everybody else is playing 9 conference games, why can't you?
Yeah, and I think that's fair, as much as you know we don't want to admit it, but this was part of the reason the SEC was finally making that move. They brought in 2 new conference members. Everyone's going to see everyone in an number of time. And it is strange that after all this conversation. So which brings me to the question, which I hear, I think I know what the answer is, but nobody will say it out loud. Why aren't they moving forward this week?
So there's never one thing, right? There's never one reason. I do think there's some apprehension from the schools that are, the kind way I think I put it is, national championships are more aspirational, mm-hmm. as opposed to the Alabamas and the Georgias, where they expect to compete for a national championship a year. You have another conference game on the schedule, and now, hey, are we going to be able to get to 6 wins, 7 wins? What's that look like for the schools that, again, the SEC load is very heavy to carry. Listen, there's also your employer. I think with ESPN, how much is ESPN willing to pay for a little more SEC inventory? I think there's a question there. Maybe if you do some kind of temporary solution, it allows ESPN a little more time to figure out what its business model is going to look right. like long term, and maybe that provides more opportunity for the SEC.
I ask you this because as an employee, and I know the individuals that run the company, and I've seen quite a few of them around here, but I work for them. I'm not there to interview. You don't work for them. Has anyone spoken to anyone from ESPN, and if so, have they given any answers?
Tried to, and frankly, I think ESPN officially will always sort of take a step back and say, listen, we're not really part of this decision. And I think that's fair.
Right.
I don't think they are dictating this decision. And that's why I say there's more than one reason to this. But there's, without question, conversations going on between the SEC and ESPN about what could this mean financially if we give another, you know, X amount of games, SEC games to you. And I think there's an element of the SEC, again, some of these schools where maybe they're waffling a little bit. Yeah, we could do 8, we could do 9. And if the numbers worked a little better, maybe they would be more inclined to go to 9. But, you know, again, I think from an ESPN standpoint, I don't think they're driving the bus, but they're clearly a player here.
But the important thing to remember, though, is whether 8 or 9 turn out to be the number, the games are still going to be on ESPN.
Without question. And that's the other part of it, too. I mean, you're talking about maybe you have to cancel if they go to 9. Greg Byrne and Saban brought it up. Nick Saban brought it up yesterday, the idea that Alabama has bulked up its schedule with multiple Power 5 non-conference opponents because they weren't sure if they were going to be able to get to 9. And now do you have to unwind, using Saban's word, unwind some of those, you know, deals with Wisconsin or Ohio State or Notre Dame because now you have a 9th conference game? So I understand that that's legitimate concern, but you're right. I mean, ultimately, the SEC still owns all, excuse me, ESPN still is getting all of the SEC content.
From your perch in New York, though, is this or is it this not just a temporary issue that it may come up at other media days, there may be shots fired, but there's been a lot of obsession over this, and what does it mean?
Yeah, so I agree with Kirby Smart to a certain degree that this is a bit of an overrated issue, but because it's the SEC, everything gets elevated to DEFCON 1. I think, yes, they maybe will take some shots. They will be an easy target. Hey, you're scared to play each other more. There's a little of that. Trust me, you'd much rather be having this conversation than the conversations they were having in the ACC about a week and a half ago, right, about revenue sharing and whether we even want to stay together. The angst in the Pac-12 route right now about whether there will still be a Pac-12 is much worse than whatever you get going on here. So, no, I mean, I think in the big picture, it's interesting because it's the SEC. And I would also say, Paul, I don't think you bring Texas and Oklahoma into your conference to not expose them more to your conference. They may not get to 8. They may not get to 9 at this meeting. They may not get to 9 next year. But eventually, I think the SEC will play more SEC games.
Finally, on the other subject that gets too much attention, but it's unavoidable, and that's the NIL portal.
Sure.
Question, their coach is going to Congress. I find it all humorous, considering watching Congress on major issues, let alone issues that I'm sure they don't deem very important, like this.
And I think that's the biggest question I still have, is how important do lawmakers in Washington believe this issue is, that they will be motivated to act somewhat quickly on this? I mean, college sports, the clock is ticking here, and every day there are no federal regulations, things become a little more muddled, but in some ways, maybe that's better. Maybe it creates a landscape that college sports is just going to have to deal with. So I don't know if I think eventually maybe the feds will step in and provide some help. But again, like, when? And I don't see a great urgency, even though we have some bills coming down the pipe. But it's one thing to introduce a bill, another thing to actually make it be legislation. There's a big election coming next year, so.
Yeah, and I don't want to diminish the idea of a Nick Saban or Kirby Smart appearing in front of Congress. It will be great optics, and it will mean very little.
I think with the football coaches, as much as guys like Smart and Saban, certainly Nick Saban, they hold a lot of weight in their kingdoms, so yeah, to speak. But I do wonder, like, how much power they really have in those. Once they get outside of their kingdom, how much power they really have.
No, they will be in great demand for selfies, sure, for pictures with leaders. But when it comes to getting something done, that will be the real issue. Ralph, thank you. Thanks to everyone, because we have a crew here that moved us from the beach inside in about 4 minutes. The hardest part I had was just finding the set. I didn't pick up anything, but thanks to everybody for making the smooth transition. And the next time we see you here, hopefully we'll be outside.
Thank you,
Ralph.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back live here at the SEC meetings. Blake Topmeyer will join us. Matt Baker, then we'll talk to the athletic director of the University of Texas. We have our first chance to talk to Zach Selman, the Mississippi State AD. And now Brandon Marcello, who every time I see Brandon, you look lighter. I mean, I've never seen a transformation like this. I joked with Lane Kiffin about an hour ago. He's lost significant weight, but you've lost like half of you.
Yeah, and Lane's like buff though, man. I don't know if we. I'd like to get us both on the beach, take our shirts off, see what's up.
How much weight have you lost?
I was about 150, and now I've gained about 16 pounds of muscle. I'm strength training now, trying to get everything
100,
going.
Did you 100 and what?
150. I was very heavy, Paul.
That's serious weight.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens when you get up to 324 pounds.
Wow. That's. I would hate to lose 150 pounds.
I think a black hole would show up and the universe would be swallowed up, man.
We apologize, but because we had to come in, and so we don't have a lot of time to talk about things other than your weight. But I would like to get your read on this week. The expectations were big. There's still 2 days remaining, but how would you encapsulate this journey down here to the beach?
You know, everybody's talking about the nine-game schedule, whether it's going to be nine games or not, and it certainly sounds like the SEC ADs are about to kick the can down the road, have a temporary model of some sort, probably an eight-game schedule for the next year or two, and it's not too surprising. We're still waiting to hear ESPN to potentially provide more money and what that would look like for the added inventory for those games. A lot of the ADs are saying, hey, you know, we want to look at what strength of schedule looks like for college football playoff. But the fact of the matter is that they've had plenty of time to study that, get the information. And really, the only other thing that they're waiting on is for the actual 12-team playoff to start so you actually see it in action. And so what are we waiting on? It just sounds like everybody's waiting to actually get into the 12-team playoff to see what happens. And I just – enough time has passed where it's time to make a decision if you want to, and I just think at this point, just kick the can down the road, stop dancing around, and just say we're going to do a short-term model, and we'll reevaluate this in a year or two.
That is what it is likely, and if it's not, then okay, we all wasted a lot of hot air on it. But perceptively, you're a national columnist. What does it look like to the SEC, or does it even matter?
I think it'll matter for a month, and then the people will start forgetting about, you know. But the problem is that the SEC is the one that's always on the forefront. And Greg Sankey says that a lot. We're the conference to look at. And to be hemming and hawing on this for over a year, and for that matter, this was going on for several years because these discussions have started well before this. I don't understand why we're sitting here still acting like that there's a lot of just unknowns out there. What are we really doing by expanding by one game? That's it's kind of ludicrous to me that there's so much angst about all this. And if you're really someone who's going to take charge, and I love Greg Sankey, I think he's a great leader, but if you want nine games, if that's what Greg Sankey wants, or if he wants eight games, stand up in the room and go, guys, listen, let's make a decision. Let's do something for the long term. Oklahoma and Texas join us in 2024. Let's get this done. And the fact that that's not happening, of course, will bring up questions about not necessarily the strength of leadership, but the motivations behind that. And a lot of people, the cynics in this, want to sit here and go, the reason why we're not seeing the SEC go, we're going nine games, is because they're waiting to hear what ESPN is going to pay them for the extra inventory. Right.
Brandon, let me be the first to tell you that this is not about money. This is it's about the young people.
If you're wearing a tie, I wouldn't believe you, but you're not wearing a tie, so I believe you.
We are at the midpoint. I know some of you who were watching earlier, maybe you went out and walked the dog, say, what happened to the show? We were at the beach, and now we're inside. I think it's pretty obvious. Weather happens at the beach. There's some lightning in the area. There's rain, and as a result, we're outside of a restaurant waiting to get in at happy hour. And we'll be right back.